Happy Friday, everybody. It's always a happy Friday.
Traffic's good.
Traffic's good.
Weather's good.
Weather's good.
It's actually sunny outside.
It's not snowing.
Wow. Where are we?
Yet. It's Blair and Barker. It is Friday. Jays and Yankees tonight, 6:35, first pitch on TV side. Ben Shulman, the Blue Jays radio play-by-play voice, will join us later on in the show. This is like one of the great days in spring training. 6:35, late start. You could do a story, get to the park. If you're a writer, do a story on the dudes that aren't, somebody who isn't going to New York or going to the game, then maybe drive up to Tampa, watch a game, actually enjoy a game.
Mm.
Not have to work.
Are you up yet?
Sweet.
Because I know you probably had some pops the night before.
Oh, so. I'd be at the
you
park
up?
By now.
You would?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Because this is like
ain't nobody there now. So who would you be watching?
There'll be some guys some guys will get in to do early work. Today is BS story day. Today is show up. Who's there? I'm going to talk to you today and interview you today. Be a lot of good stories coming into that. Huh. But anyhow, Gerrit Cole pitching for the Yankees tonight. Chad Dallas going for the Blue Jays. The Jays 5-0 losers to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Do you know how many times I've misidentified teams as being the Pittsburgh Pirates this year? The Philadelphia Phillies. But it's like the third time. Does that mean that the Pirates are going to win the Central? Maybe. I don't know.
I mean.
Or does it just mean I'm old? Probably the latter.
I think that
probably the latter.
I think you got it.
5-0 the Jays. It really doesn't matter who they lost or what the score. Who they lost to what the score was yesterday. Only story that matters is Jose Berrios, 2 innings, ran out his new cutter.
I didn't really see it. I mean, I guess a
he used
couple
it to Bohm. I think
maybe a couple
no, not
of times.
Bohm. Alec Bohm, wrong guy. Bryson Stott, I think he used it to one time.
Yeah.
I
know that sounds like he's going to try and backdoor it to some left. He's going to try and steal some strikes with it. You know, in sort of those front hip two seam counts, he'll throw that to maybe element of surprise, get some weak contact. I mean, I don't abuse it, don't show it too early, work on it, side sessions, those kind of things. Don't go against what got you to be Jose Berrios. And I think that's sort of where he's at with it. It's, you know, I don't know really what to think of that because he's really good now. And if you start adding things that, you know, that you would throw other pitches in those counts, you got to make sure that, you know, your misses are really good. Make sure who you're throwing it to. That way, if you throw it down the middle, it ain't a three-run homer instead of an RBI single. And I think he's smart enough to be able to do that and work it in when he's supposed to work it in.
Do you see anything else from him? Again, 2 innings.
No, the rotation, look, I don't even think you pay any attention to that.
I was about to say.
I got
to
be honest with you. I'm going to raise my hand and say this. The offense is a snooze fest. Like,
I know it's early.
6 games into this thing, six? But man, a lot. Like
How many at-bats have dudes had? You know, Vladdy got a couple of hits yesterday. But how many I just want to look at the stats because I cannot believe.
Holy moly.
Like, I cannot believe that you would go there already.
Let me ask you a question. You know, predictability is a huge thing. We talk about that. We talk about that everywhere.
Bo Bichette has nine.
Yeah,
you know who has the most at bats on this team right now through spring training? This is why I can't even believe we are having this conversation. Who do you think has the most at bats right now?
Kirk.
Kevin Barker does. No, Cam Eaton does. Why are we having this discussion? It doesn't literally.
Yeah,
nothing you have seen so far matters.
You know. Okay. You know why we have this conversation?
Because it gets me pissed off.
That's not why. It's because everybody that matters that had down years last year have told us that they're coming into camp the best shape they've ever been in.
Now you hear that coaches are going to
home fields, you know, where they were living in the offseason and we were getting to the nuts and bolts and what we were doing wrong. Yeah, just occasionally you'd like to see simplified. Get a fastball and a 2-0 count down the middle. Not jam yourself. Hit that thing to the moon no matter what game it is. That's all.
I cannot.
That's it.
But maybe I'm asking
a little too much.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, are you doing this to get a rise from me?
It's Friday, but I'll tell you, like, it's And I'm sure if you walked up some hitting coaches, they'd say the same thing that I'm saying.
Let me tell you this. Everybody in this camp is in the best shape of their life. And you know what they're doing when they go to the plate? They're facing a guy in another team who's in the best shape of his life.
He throws a fastball down the middle just like everybody else does. Everybody else does.
You're better than that. You're better than that.
Actually, you know what I'm better than? That I talk to people that are on the team, around the team.
And they're worried.
Worried's not the right word.
Then I might pick them for last place. If they're worried already.
You've been looking for a reason to do that.
I haven't.
We've been talking about that for about 3 weeks now.
If they're worried already, good Lord.
You know what it is, too? I think what the adjustments that you've made in the offseason, you'd like to see that, you know, show up when it matters the most.
But it doesn't matter the most now.
It doesn't?
No. Doesn't matter now.
So why play?
Well, that's a good question. We can have a discussion about why we're even playing these games. And it's up to me. You don't play Grapefruit League games. You just have dudes in labs working on stuff.
It really is amazing that I'm sure they still have that. Labs.
Anyhow.
I'm sure they have a traveling lab. I'm sure that lab will be in Tampa tonight, right? Trying to make sure that dudes are doing mechanical things that they're supposed to do.
Tonight you're facing Garrett Cole. You're facing Garrett Cole.
Oh, nobody.
And if Garrett Cole...
You think Garrett Cole's going to be fired up or not?
If Garrett Cole shuts them out for two innings.
Oh, that's happening. Oh, that's happening.
Man.
You know that.
All right. I promised the listeners and the viewers that every Friday we would take their calls, their comments, their questions. So we're going to do that.
Mm.
The back leg line, 416-413-3959. We brought in people today, three or four people, especially to go through all the calls and put together the best calls that we could find. And we will do that every Friday. And even when we change time slots, we'll still do it. So I will notify you on, what's it called? X, whatever the hell it's called today. I will send out a notification on the social media sewer and let you know when we're soliciting calls. And you can call up. What?
I can't believe it's that easy to get you fired up.
No, today I came in like you were in a weird mood.
I'm in a
bad mood.
Look how nice it is outside.
Like, F1 starts this weekend, and
I think
Alpine's
you might be the only one
suck.
That cares about that. But the weather's nice. Like there's
My
some
team's
things to be happy
stink.
About. Which team?
Alpine. They're going to stink. It's going to be awful. Anyhow. 416-413-3959. Back league line. Ben Shulman. Yeah. He'll join us at 11:30. He'll lighten the mood.
Oh, the mood's light.
No, you came in.
No, the mood's light. I think there's some room for improvement.
Last place. They're not hitting.
I think their rotation is unbelievably good.
Early on, I'm not impressed with Don Mattingly as the offensive coordinator. I think it might be time to move on from him. I'm just following your lead. This never would have happened if Dave Hudgens was still
around.
That's
a great point.
416-413-3959. Now let's go to the back leg line. Luke from Sudbury.
Just wondering who's going to be the fourth outfielder with Kiermaier and the other outfielders needing so many days off. When these days off, who's going to be the fourth outfielder? Schneider really doesn't work for me. Just wondering if you guys have any thoughts. Thanks.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, Kev. Kevo, I will turn it over to you.
Yeah, of course.
I'm sure it's somebody who's going to be 0-19 in spring training.
You got to think about your options. Would it be Cam Eaton? Nope. Would it be Addison Barger? Maybe Nathan Lucas. Probably not. You were thinking it probably Isaiah Kinnifalefa or Kevin Biggio. You know, you put Dalton Varsho in center. You know, IKF could play left. Kevin Biggio could play left or right. Like, you could move some big leaguers around.
Don't you think
that you're putting the best offensive team on the field that you could? I just don't know the depth when it comes to the outfield from the minor leaguers warrants a complete moving around of that when you already got, you know, IKF's going to play a big part in the outfield somewhere. I know he's going to play some 30. He'll probably open the season if they don't bring in Chapman or go out and get somebody else that can play first or third base every single day. So he'll play a little bit of third, but I'm assuming that's the way it'll be, right? If Davis Schneider makes the team, and I'm probably the only ones raising the hand right now, he ain't on it. But you would think that that's probably the way it's going to go, is it ain't going to be a minor leaguer. It'll be somebody that's already established that they're just going to mix in out there.
Don't you think it depends on how – to me, it depends on what they decide to do at second base and the infield too, more than anything else. That will decide who your extra outfielder
is. I'm still not sure why everybody's just glossing over Santiago Espinal. Defensively, he's not an everyday player. He's not going to play every day. But when he does play a little,
he's not going to be in the outfield.
I know. You said the second base spot, which would give them an opportunity to move Kevin Biggio around where they want to against righties, that kind of thing.
That's entirely possible.
I don't know what they feel about Addison Barger. If he's hitting, okay. But would he be the guy that would give somebody a day off to DH? Or
Addison Barger, really, thing, right? You're probably only going to play him, and he's not going to play center field for you, so he's probably going to play right field.
No, that'll be the Varsha thing. Dalton Varsha's going
to
play right.
I'd like to see Addison Barger start the year in AAA and just play every day. And just, you know, he's a guy I want up. If you're going to bring him up when he's hot, bring him up when he's on a roll. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, fourth outfielder.
It's a solid question. I would think that they're, you know, because of who is playing every day and or trying to, you got to think about it, right? Because KK is a year older. I mean, he runs through walls to try and catch baseball. Sooner or later, something's not going to go right, and they're going to have to maneuver and then put a guy in left field because Varsho's moved over. Like, they're going to have to maneuver things.
You're going to be looking
Springer, how do you keep him on the field to try and have 30 and 90? So, you know, there's some things there, but I do think they have enough big leaguers that they can move some people around and fill in the blanks good enough that offensively, because I don't know about you.
Well, options.
But it ain't about preventing runs this year.
Just hang on. But options also figure into this. Again, Ernie Clement, we know the organization likes him. He's out of options. There are a whole bunch of things that are going to have to factor in here. And the other thing, we haven't even mentioned this. There are some really good fourth outfield types who are still out on the market.
Sure.
And you know what? April 1st rolls around. They're not going to be asking for three-year contracts at $20 million a year. No. So let's see where it goes. But it is a good question.
It is.
Right now, I think it depends on who gets the infield spots. I'm with Kevin. I know Kevin Biggio hasn't played yet. He's got a shoulder injury. I don't even know if you'd call it a shoulder injury or shoulder issue. Yeah, we're led to believe he's taking batting practice. We'll probably see him in next week.
Yeah,
he's on the team. So there's, to me, your super utility guy who is going to get a lot of time in the outfield. And that answers that question. You know, Dave, I'm kind of with you on Davis Schneider. We've talked to, look, I can give you credit because you were the guy. You saw Ernie Clement play twice, and you said, you know what? This is the guy you want in the team because you can set him on the bench for 3 days.
Yeah.
He's going to go up. He's going to give you a decent at-bat. He's going to make the plays in the infield.
Mm-hmm.
And he's at that stage of his career where he's probably knows how to handle that situation. And I really like him.
I do, too. I like him because
I really like him.
I think his primary position is shortstop. That's a big deal.
Yes.
And offensively, he can handle the bat. Again, you know, every guy on their team is not going to hit 30 homers. They need the guy that can move a guy over with a nobody out and a runner on second to turn it over to the top of the order so he can run into one and hit a two-run homer and make it easier that way.
As long as it isn't George Springer doing that. You want your bench guys to be able to do a little bit for you. But anyhow, that is a good question.
It is.
And I would also remind people again, you know, look at CJ Cron. He's not an outfielder, but he just signed. There's I think Adam Duvall still out there. I mean, there are dudes out there.
Yeah, I think for me anyway, I think the fourth outfielder's on the team already.
Probably.
Yeah, I think so.
Probably.
Yeah.
John in North York.
I've got a hypothetical.
I love hypotheticals.
For you. It's probably never going to happen, and it seems like a silly idea. However, how about Vladdy for Pete Alonso? There's your power hitter right there. I'd like it. And can you plug or see Alonso being plugged into this lineup? Ooh. There, it would be great. anyways, that's my comment.
Yeah, you got, you know that whether or not he stinks or he's really good, you've got Vladdy for 2 more years minimum. Pete Alonso, I cannot believe the Mets aren't going to sign Pete Alonso to an extension this year.
How come they haven't done it already?
Well, I think, you know, they've got a new GM in. It's a weird organization, but I don't think you can let Pete Alonso.
50 and 100 don't grow on trees.
No.
I said it, 50 and 100.
No, he.
Absolutely. I think you're to the point now with Vladdy. It's the rubber's met the road. Like, it's just, as much as I can't believe I'm saying this, because I've been real stubborn about the Vladdy thing. But man, it is just consistently what you don't see from Vladdy. It's just head scratching, and I don't understand it. And I think it's time now. He's been around long enough. 24 is not an excuse anymore. I think if you could go out and find a better option, and it would include getting rid of Vladdy.
I think we're at the point now with 2 years left. I don't even really want to have this conversation, but we've touched on it a bit, because at some point it may become a talking point. And keep in mind that, you know, so many people say to me, Jeff, they were willing to offer Shohei Ohtani that money. Why didn't they just take that money and sign Vladdy and Bo? Because I got to tell you, Shohei Ohtani that wasn't entirely a baseball decision. That was more of a bit. There were as many business people involved in that pitch than there were baseball people. I'm going to be honest here. You can make a better case for giving Shohei Ohtani $700 million than you can for giving Vladdy $350 million. You just can. You just can.
Yeah, I just don't know. You got to ask yourself, if you were the owner of the Toronto Blue Jays, would it make business sense, with the way you've seen Vladdy hit the last couple years, to drop that amount of money on him?
Yeah. So, right. But I threw that out there because, you know, people have made that. I can just tell you, the money that was there for Shohei Ohtani is not there for anybody else. I mean, we had David Sampson on the other day talking about special money, right? The money for Shohei Ohtani, that doesn't exist anymore. Mm. That's gone.
Yeah.
That's poof. Gone. Doesn't exist anymore. We're back to the Blue Jays operating with a 100 and whatever it is million-dollar payroll, or 200 and whatever is million-dollar payroll. It just is. The money doesn't exist anymore. Mm. So just, you know, move on from that. What I'm saying, though, about Vladdy, we're at the point now with Vladdy, with 2 years left. If you were to entertain the possibility of trading Vladdy, you have to do something, get something in return that is going to keep your window of opportunity open. What does that mean?
Yeah.
That means getting somebody younger than Vladdy. Mm. It means getting somebody you're going to have for 3 or 4 years as opposed to 2 years.
I know what I do. When the Padres get off to a bad start, I'm calling the Padres trying to get Fernando Tatis Jr. That's me. It'll never happen, probably.
No.
But he'd look nice in this uni and in the lineup.
Speaking of Vladdy, Ray in Windsor wanted to weigh in on Vladdy.
I'm looking for your unvarnished take on the two most talked about players this spring. For me, I see this as a make or break year for their staying with the Jays. For Vladdy, I've yet to be convinced that he is as good as he seems to think he is. The stats in his first season were skewed by playing in minor league parks.
I disagree.
He doesn't give the impression that he is as serious as some others to consistently improve. To me, he doesn't seem to have that inherent drive like, say, Bo Bichette. As for Manoah, with all his early success and attention on and off the field, in my opinion, it fostered a narrative in his own mind that left him unprepared physically and mentally coming into the following season. It showed when his false bravado quickly fell apart. Thanks, guys. I listen to you daily.
Thanks, Ray.
I think Ray put a little effort into that.
I think Ray did.
I like that.
You should take a note from him.
Look. Did the ballpark in Buffalo and Dunedin help Vladdy middle the other way? Probably.
Yeah.
Did it help him consistently be on time on the fastball? Absolutely not. Like, those are way too different things. Did the home run numbers go up however many because of the couple of parks that he played in? I guess I'd have to go back and look at how many homers he had to right center in Dunedin. That's the one thing. It looked to me like, and I'm going to be the first one to raise, that the people that I've talked to, is the difference in the hitting coaches. when Dante Bichette was there in Buffalo, boy, the timing, you looked at the entire team. They had an identity. They walked to the plate, and it was get it down and get it singing on velocity. Start there. Everything else will take care of itself. They were feared. Forget about the ballpark. They were feared. Marcus Semien was dropping over 40. And he was hitting like 36 of those off the heater.
Can I just jump in
for
a minute here?
That's the difference.
Can I jump in for a minute here? Did we underestimate Marcus Semien? Like, when Marcus Semien left here as a free agent, we kind of went, well, okay, we can see that. We can see that. Good on. But I think we really underestimated Marcus Semien. And we had people in the we had players in the team tell us that.
Yeah, look, it's very easy to say that because of what the Blue Jays have not done. You know, we could underestimate Teoscar Hernandez and Lourdes Gurriel Jr., and you take away those three dudes in your order, and then you have a bunch of guys that are trying to fill in the blanks for that. Yeah, it's a lot to ask, and you're putting all the pressure on one guy at first that, quite frankly, is maybe not capable of doing it. So, yeah, look, I hopefully raised what listening to the show because I've been the first guy, and it's been tough on both of these, and you're the person that says the Manoa starts mean absolutely nothing. And, man, can I disagree more with that?
It's not that they don't mean anything. It's that if he isn't that good, he goes down to AAA. He's a fifth starter. He's your fifth starter.
Yeah, but the reality is because of what they're not doing offensively, they're a much better team with him in the rotation.
Well,
so
not
it may not be
not if he isn't
a quick
well.
And easy move to do that. That's the point, right? And everybody else they have will fit in easier. Absolutely.
Fifth
but he's better when he's in there being
fifth
the fifth
starter.
Guy. He is, because giving them innings so you can use the other guys in the bullpen the way you want to use them.
Anyhow. We are led to believe that the Jays talked to I keep hearing this. That the Jays talked to teams about Alek Manoah. Why? You're not going to be trading the guy at his maximum. I can see now if you're working on a multiplayer deal or something like that, and somebody says, But I mean, I don't know. But I'll tell you what, the Vladdy question is something we're going to be asked. I know we're going to be asked all year long. And I'll just say this, you know, it's not just simply a matter of ownership stepping up and paying Vladdy, because ownership is showing they'll step up. I mean, ownership is over. This team is overpaid for basically everything. So it's not like they're afraid to spend money. And I mean that we know the whole deal with Toronto. You got to overpay to get players up here. They've done it. Like, when is the last time you have heard a Blue Jays general manager bitch about payroll the way J.P. Richard did? They don't.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing to complain about.
Absolutely.
Because you're getting what you want.
Yeah.
So,
When you get to this point, there's
an element of shared risk. If Vladdy wants a long-term contract, I mean, there's two sides to this thing here. There's two sides to this thing here. Same thing with Bo.
Well, I think
there's two sides
it.
Of this.
Thing. I think Vladdy wants it. It's just that there's a lot of unknowns. It's the next. He wants the next tier money.
Yeah, and he's not a next tier player.
Put up the next tier numbers.
Nope.
That's the thing, right?
No, you're right. Simon in Australia. Let's go down under.
Ooh.
G'day, Kevin and Jeff. It's
good
Simon
day, mate.
Australia here. I hear Kevin speak on the radio quite regularly. Oh, he's a top 10 player. He's a top 10 player in baseball. I'm certain there's about 15 to 20 names on that list. I'm wondering whether you can give a definitive top 10 players in baseball list in the lead up to the 2024
I love
season.
This.
Looking forward to it. Thanks for the show.
That's awesome. Play.
Thank you, Simon.
Simon.
Can I guess your list?
Sure, you can try.
Okay. I'm going to go number one, Aaron Judge, and I've not seen Kevin's list.
Yeah, that's right.
Number one, Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
Number two, Juan Soto.
No, not even close.
Okay, well, let me see.
Well, you do yours, and I'll do mine.
I would go Otani, too. That's just me. You got Soto on your list.
Yeah.
You went in order. See, I can't go in order. My brain isn't wired that way. Soto would be in the list. Please tell me you don't have Mike Trout on there anymore.
Just do your list.
Why didn't you?
Want me to do my list
Judge
first?
Judge Otani, Soto. Rutschman's on my list. He's not number 10.
Oh, gosh.
He's not number 10, but Rutschman's on my list. Seager's on my list. Yordan Alvarez is on my list. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. God, I'm missing somebody, obviously.
Okay, let me do my
list.
Yeah,
you do yours.
Okay, number one, I have Judge. Number two, I have Mookie Betts. Number three, I have Ronald Acuna Jr. Number four, I have Freddie Freeman. Number five, I have Juan Soto. Number six, I have Otani. Number seven, I have Yordan Alvarez. Number eight, I have Corey Seager, just because of health issues.
Yep.
I wanted to put him in the top five, but I can't do that because this year I'm thinking to myself, can he play 100 games?
Okay.
So that's why I put Juan Soto in top five. Number nine, I have Julio Rodriguez. I think 30, 30, and 100 don't grow on trees. Now, number 10, I have four different guys.
Okay.
I have Kyle Tucker as my number 10 guy because I get back to that 30, 30, 100. Doesn't grow on trees. This is my list. It's sort of that predictability thing.
All right.
Okay, why the Astros so good? Because basically, they're predictable. I can write their names in the lineup, and I basically can tell you what their numbers are going to look like if they play this amount of games at the end of the season. And if they do that, my team's going to ultimately go where I want it to go. So I got Tucker at 10, and then I also have Bryce Harper, Fernando Tatis Jr., Mike Trout. Obviously Mike Trout because he doesn't play a ton of games, but when he does play, nobody can argue how good he is. Bryce Harper, look, it is that me against the world, I'm way better than you, and I play with Bryce. He had that when he was 18. He's got that now. I'm putting Bryce in that. And Fernando Tatis Jr., I'm big on him.
Okay, let's...
Like, just tool-wise, he's probably got more tools than anybody else in that list. I mean, unless you throw in Ronald Acuna Jr.
All right, but you know what?
That's my list.
That's a good list.
You noticed I didn't have a pitcher on there?
Yeah,
because he ain't a player. They're not players.
Okay, so let's try to put together a top 10. A combined top 10. Number one, you want Judge, number one. Over Acuna Jr.?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, the 2024 numbers.
That's fine.
Ask yourself, because now he has Soto protecting, which means sometimes you can do it in front of you.
I have no problem.
On base, got a throw to him now. You know, home runs the same amount he always hits.
Okay, Judge.
RBIs go way up. Now you're talking like.
Show top 10.
Oh,
Judge is number one. Okay. Number two?
Mookie Betts. Athlete playing second. A little easier on the body, more offensive-minded now because of the position he's playing every single day. Where he's hitting in that order, it's just that's crazy stuff. So, yeah, Mookie Betts.
Number three?
Ronald Acuna Jr., just because he's on the Braves, he's leading off.
You're putting Otani where?
Otani's sixth in my list. He's not in the top five.
Okay. So, Acuna Jr., Freeman.
Freddie Freeman's fourth. Fifth is Juan Soto. Juan Soto's hitting in front of Judge. That's protecting.
Sixth is Otani.
Seven is Yordan Alvarez for obvious reasons. Eight is Corey Seager. Health. I wanted to put him in the top five.
Yep.
I can't do that. I don't feel comfortable doing it. Nine's Julio Rodriguez.
Yep.
Plays center. He thinks he's good. He is good. And 10 is Corey, but I'm going to start with Tucker.
Okay, show top 10. I agree. Well, I'll go with you and Judge. I would put Otani second. I would put Acuna third. I'd put Betts fourth. I'd put Soto fifth. I'd put Freeman sixth. I'm with you on Alvarez. I got to put Adley Rutschman up there. Catcher. Good offensive player.
He may not be in the top 20.
Oh, Seager as well. And I mean, J-Rod, and then you get the bot. See, I don't think Mike Trout's a top 10 player. I just don't. I don't think he's a top 10 player.
The only reason you're saying that is because of
health.
He never
plays.
Yeah.
Same thing as Corey Seager. He doesn't play. He never plays.
Lasting impression.
Bryce Harper, top 10? He's
no, because I have Tucker in there, but Bryce is... Again, you got a lot goes into where he's trying to do it. The market that he does it in. Doing it in Philly and doing it in Houston is two different things. Doing it in Yankee Stadium and everywhere else.
Our producer Mark Boffo wants to make a case for Matt Olson. It's a pretty good shout.
Top 10 is strong though. I mean, again, this is top five. I think is pretty easy when it comes to the names.
You can fiddle with the order, but the names are
6 through 10 and say 6 through 13. I mean, you can throw the name in there any way you wanted.
You won me over in Judge. Especially with Soto hitting in front of him. You won me over. Last year, I would have said Otani number one, but you won me over in Judge.
You could say Otani last year because he's a pitcher and a hitter. Otani just being a hitter, Judge will bring, my eyes, more to the table than Ohtani will.
That's an interesting list.
It's fun. It's fun to make up. It's, I think, 1 through 9, in my mind anyways, obvious. 10, say, through 15.
That's when you get into personal preferences.
You're getting into what are you looking for? Yep. Who do you like? What team do you want to root for? What positions do you watch the most?
You wouldn't
like,
put,
do you bring in, you know, throwing arm and
you wouldn't put Rushman top 20.
I wouldn't.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Ben Shulman is a Blue Jays radio play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. He'll join us next. It's Blair and Barker for Friday on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
Dive deep into Toronto sports and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Parker asked an interesting question. We're going to deal with it. We'll ask our next guest about it. But we won't ask him about it right out of the way, out of the gate.
Hmm.
Maybe I should give him a hint. Like, can I pre-ask? Let's find out. Ben Shulman, Blue Jays voice.
Ask Ben. He'll have a good answer
on Sportsnet.
Yeah, yeah.
Joins us. Ben, thanks for doing this, man.
Thanks so much. You guys have piqued my interest.
Okay.
I'm happy to come on, but what's up?
Okay, I'm going to throw this out, and then don't answer it. Because I'll get back to it later. But Barker and I have been going back and forth about this on just texting each other. Barker, and I'm kind of with him. Barker wants to know what the Jays' offensive identity is. Okay, I'm just going to plant that seed. Put it aside for a minute, and then we'll ask you, like, easier questions. And then you can come back to that.
Yep.
All right. Welcome to the show. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
I always like asking folks who've been down in spring training for a period of time, a very simple question, whether they're broadcasters, executives, what's the most impressive thing you've seen so far this spring? It can be opposing player. It can be Jays player. Like, the one thing that, if you had to put together a top 10 list of stuff that really impressed you this spring, what would be number one?
There are definitely a lot of options. I mean, we did get to see Juan Soto in his Yankees debut, and I find him to be incredibly impressive every time I see him.
Mm-hmm.
The most impressive thing I've seen so far in the spring, though, I'll circle one play because Shai Davidi and I talked about it a bit. Alan Rodon in that same game against the Yankees hit a 2-strike pitch that looked like it was down a little bit out of the zone, and he reached down. On I believe this was Sunday, and somehow hit it for a bases-clearing double the opposite way into the left center field gap. And I could not believe that pitch carried that far. I thought he was blooping a single into left center, and that ball just kept going and going and going and landed up right in front of the track and bounced to the wall, I think. So that's up there, but I would say that Juan Soto and Tamar Johnson, the fourth overall pick recently for Pittsburgh, hitting homers off Cabrera and Garcia, two major league relievers, those are a couple close seconds and thirds.
Awesome. Rodon is an interesting guy, isn't he? Because we hear a lot about Aurelvis Martinez and Ricky Tiedemann in the organization. He's a guy who was kind of very quietly climbed up the ladder. You know, you look a lot of places like FanGraphs or MLB Pipeline. When they put together their lists, you notice this guy's name. And you made an interesting point, I thought, during your call yesterday about Alan Rodon and the fact that here's a guy. And I don't know if he's going to make the team, but I mean, at some point in the next 2 years, it shouldn't shock people if you see him having an at-bat in the majors. And I'll leave it at that.
For sure.
But this is a guy who had a lot of success in the minors last year after changing his swing. Then he gets up here, and as you talked about yesterday, and I found this really interesting. So he gets up here after the type of minor league season every minor leaguer wants to have. And one of the first things they tell him is, congratulations, thanks for coming. We love you. We want you to do this differently. We want you to lower your hands.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, because you almost don't want to mess with something that's good. I think that's a lot of people's inclination. And obviously, the numbers speak for themselves last year. I mean, the guy hit about .320 in between high A and double A and got on base a ton and hit a ton of doubles. But I think they think that there's just, you know, more he can get out of his bat, and that's more singles into doubles. I think that's a few more homers, but I also just think they think he'll be quicker to the ball. Like his traditional swing was pretty unorthodox last year. So it's been interesting to see so far, because he hasn't hit for a ton of contact in the spring, but he has hit for power. It's also the spring and it's limited opportunities. But the one thing that everyone seems to like about this guy is that he's one of the smartest guys out there, that he's someone that really adjusts well and understands things. So I think that's what gives them a lot of the confidence to take a guy who's playing well and still tinker with it.
Ben, is there a, when you walk to different stations, there's stations everywhere, right? Every little group is doing their own little thing. Is there one specific thing that you're hearing that they're trying to hone in on to get off to a good start in their season, whatever that is? It could be offensively, defensively, running the bases, attention to detail. Please don't say that. They say that all the time. This is a big league team. They should know how to do.
Please don't mention
things.
The word process, because there is a $5,000 fine for mentioning the word process in this show.
Those are cuss words on this show. Is there some little thing that stands out to you that's sort of being honed in on that could help them get off to a good start?
Yeah, I think the one thing, specifically from the offensive side, because they're certainly trying to get better pitching, they're certainly trying to defend better, but they did that at a very high level last year. So I wouldn't say that that's the loudest thing you hear around camp. But from the offensive side, I think what they want to do, and again, this is the thing that everyone wants to do, and this is kind of the tough thing about spring, but they want to string at-bats together is a big thing that they want to do. They don't want people to go up there just thinking about themselves or not understanding the situation. They have, they are a team, even though it's nine individual guys hitting at different times. And so it does feel like stringing at bats together has been a big focus for them, because I don't want to spoil the identity thing too early, but I still don't think they're going to be a team that hits home runs like they did in 21 or 22. I don't see why they would return to that form, even if they hit more homers than they did the year before. So they need, whether it's, if you're going to pop out, then it's on nine pitches. It's not swinging at a pitch down and away right when you see the first pitch of the at-bat. Or it's the simple stuff. It's, hey, maybe if there's a guy on second base and there's nobody out, focus on the other half of the plate and try and make sure that you move that guy over. It is a lot of simple stuff at the end of the day, but it feels like one of the big Don Mattingly things is playing team offense. And so I think that's been a big part of it.
All right. You opened the door to the offensive identity, which I greatly appreciate, because I do sometimes have a habit of forgetting to revisit questions. And I heard your answer, and I'm kind of with you in that. That seems to be this team's offensive identity is pitching and defense, isn't it? Really?
I think the one thing they're going to try to hang their hat on a lot, I do think they'll hit more home runs, just because I think Vlad will probably hit a few more home runs than he did last year. If Bo's healthier, I think he will. I lean that George and Kirk and some of the other guys might too. I think the thing that I can pick out from the first four, five, six guys, depending on how they line it up, I do think when they're going right, Springer is a tough out. He's going to foul off a lot of pitches. I think Bo can foul off pretty much any pitch within like a foot of the strike zone. Vladdy's a tough guy to pitch to in a multitude of ways. Turner, like Brandon Belt, has long plate appearances, but it's less taking pitches and more fouling off pitches. I mean, Justin Turner just does not let you get out of that bat. And then I don't know exactly who they would line up after that, but Kevin Biggio has typically been a guy that's going to make you work pretty hard, especially in the back half of last season, to try and get you out. And Alejandro Kirk, when he's right, small strike zone, high contact skills. So I think if things are going to go right for them on the offensive side, it's going to take pitchers a lot of pitches. They're going to try and get into bullpens early. I think that's something they didn't do a ton last year. But if they can get into bullpens early and bank wins in game three of a series, because they've taxed your bullpen in games one and two, and hopefully, maybe one of it, or if not both of those, games one and two also. I think that's the thing that it seems like they're trying to hang their hat on. That's my opinion, at least from the outside.
Ben, I know it's early. Any idea who the fourth outfielder will be and who platoons at second? We do think it's probably Kevin Biggio against righties. Who gets some lefty at-bats and plays second, and who is the fourth outfielder?
Yeah, it's a tough question. I almost think the fourth outfielder is divided in half a little bit. If George Springer is DHing, because he's going to need some DH days, I think Biggio is the right fielder most of the time. But when you're talking about a lefty in, and you're probably going to take one of Kiermaier or Varsho out, Right now, I lean that they would bump Kiner Falefa out there. He played a lot of outfield for the Yankees last year, even played center field, but played in the corners as well. And they've talked about getting him some time in left. I am very confident he'll be on the team. So he's kind of, I think, the left fielder right now. Whether you take Kiermaier or Varsho out, the other one's going to play center. So that's probably not much of an issue. So I think that's the outfield situation. The infield is a bit of a mess to try and predict. I think right now I feel pretty solid about Davis Schneider being the platoon at second base. It could be Espinal. It could be Clement. Espinal also might still be, with the club on the team if Davis Schneider is a second baseman. Davis Schneider is not a shortstop, so they do need someone else to play short. Potentially, or if IKF is playing short because Bo is out, then they need someone to play third, which could be Espinal. So I think that it's really tough right now, but if I had to lean anywhere, I feel okay about saying Biggio and Schneider, and then I think Biggio and Kiner Falefa do a lot of the work in the corners. Mm-hmm. But there's, between Clement, Eduardo Escobar, Espinal, it is a little bit hard to try and get through everything right now and figure out exactly what they're going to do.
Ben, we know that the Jays, when it comes to Alek Manoah, have a pretty clear checklist, and that checklist doesn't, at least I mean, Barker's going to disagree with me, but it seems as if the checklist doesn't necessarily include results. And what by that I mean is it spring training, they're interested in, is he hitting these targets, et cetera, et cetera. What's your read on what they realistically think they are going to get from Alek Manoah? He's clearly not going to be the opening day starter. Are they just looking at him as a guy who will be in the rotation and that's it?
I think for this season, if he is a regular member of the rotation, let's say, and this is partly my opinion and partly things I've heard, and, if he's in the rotation regularly, he can start every 5 days, pitch, five innings. Like, he doesn't have to be the 7-8 inning horse that he was a couple years ago right now. And if they can go through the season and have a normal year, I do think overall that would be a success. He still is a very young guy, and I think there's probably some time, everyone feels, that if they can just get him right for this season as a major leaguer, then they can try and get back to that dominant stuff next year or going forward. I mean, hey, if he comes out and he's dominant, they would be happy about it.
Sure.
But it's a tough situation to read. It's hard to know because they have a lot more pitching depth than they did last year. They probably wouldn't have to go down to four starters if one of their starters had something happen or needed to go down or something like that. I think there's a lot more confidence in Bowden Francis than there was last season when they didn't really know what he was and what he could do as a reliever or a starter at the major league level. So he's an interesting guy, I think, to like frame expectations for right now. But I think if he can just get, if he can make 27 starts or 28 starts or whatever it is, and if his ERA was 4.5 or something like that, I personally would say that that's a pretty good success and you can build on that going forward. And I would agree, Kevin was saying, if I'm understanding correctly, that they don't care too much about results. I do think right now that that's probably true in the same way that, like, if he had gone out and looked phenomenal and struck out every single guy that he faced in his first start, I don't think that they would have thought he was going to go back and challenge for the Cy Young again either. I think it's too early and there's too much weird stuff with how people play spring training that it's hard, at least for one start, for them to play too much into the results.
Ben, really good stuff, my friend. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, buddy.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Take care. Ben Schulman, Blue Jays radio voice on Sportsnet. And the games will be on the radio this weekend. Tonight they're on TV, and I think it's on streaming as well.
There's some love for Davis Schneider. I mean, it sounds like there's some love for Mitch White because they saw 98 once or twice in a simulated game
field
12.
But,
there's some love there that sometimes I think will make you scratch your head a little bit. But
there's also
some fill in the blanks. I think
there's also some politics there in that he is a guy you traded for. He is a guy you kept last year. Clearly, when you trade for a guy, there are people in the organization who must think, let's put it this way. Mitch White's going to have a longer leash than a lot of other guys would get. And that, frankly, doesn't necessarily come as a surprise to me, even though this organization has shown in the past they will move on from guys. And they'll, if they have to, they'll swallow some money to do it. But, yeah, the offensive identity question. See, I don't – to me, offensive identity is – anytime people talk about identity, I get frustrated because to me that's like – that's a hockey thing. What's your identity as a team? Well, we're tough and we're hard to play against. Right, but what does that mean?
Do you have a lineup full of guys that can hit a fastball? Do you have a lineup full of guys that know how to lay off the elevated fastball and get their pitch? Do you have a bunch of guys in an order that know how to mash lefties? Do you have a guy that an entire lineup that knows how to hit at home? Do you have an entire lineup that knows how to hit on the road and is okay enough to win games at home? That's an identity. Do they have any of those?
I think
the answer's no. Right now they don't.
I think Ben was right. The identity is the identity is to be determined because the identity changes if Vladdy, Springer, and Alejandro Kirk have good years. Then your identity changes. To me, your identity is almost what Vladdy gives you. If Vladdy is the Vladdy he was when he was an MVP finalist, then you're talking about a team that's got an offensive identity. If you have Vladdy of last year, then you're kind of, what did you call them last year? The most boring 89 win team in baseball?
Yeah.
You know, pretty.
Well, because of the way the Yankees are much better, what the Orioles have done, the Rays and the Red Sox, you would think are not going to be atrocious. They're going to be probably a little bit better than people think they're going to be.
I don't know, you
could talk about them being the most boring 84 or 85 win team in baseball. That's the difference, right? This is what I said, urgency early in camp. To see guys turn the corner. That's all you want. Like you watch all these other good teams on the MLB Network or any other place you go to watch teams in spring training. They destroy fastballs. Like are destroying them. Do you see the Jays do that? That's all I'm saying. Like that's the urgency. I'm not saying you get 15 hits a game and score 30 runs a game. I'm not saying that. But look like you're supposed to be really good at what you're supposed to be good at. And right now, I mean, I see dudes that get fastballs down the middle and 2-0 counts that jam themselves to hit singles to center. That's the thing, right? And they got real lucky. You've said this. A lot of people have said this with the rotation last year being real healthy and getting 30 starts from four dudes. You really think that's going to happen? That's why you need to make up for it in other spots. Do they have a good lineup? Yeah. They got some guys like you mentioned who have come back to a little bit of what they are, and you could say it out loud. Kirky, you know, 800 OPS. Jansen played 90 games. Vladdy, we say it to her blue in the face. Mm-hmm. George Springer, 30 and 90. Bo gets 200 bazillion hits. You probably know he's going to do that. Turner's going to be better with runners in scoring position because he's going to get those at-bats other than the Chapmans and the Varshas of the world. So they are going to be a little bit better in those situations, but it's what the other teams have done. Now you have to do more than you were expected to do. That's the whole point in all this, and I think that's the urgency.
You know, you made an interesting point, too, about Springer, something I thought about. We've talked about how the Jays were so healthy with their pitching last year, and it's probably it would be surprising if that continues. I think it also bothers me a bit that George Springer had one of the healthiest years of recent years in his career and did not have a good year offensively by his standards. Like that's the one thing that scares me about George Springer is he played a lot last year and it wasn't the type of year he wants. You know, it's a different thing. If a guy plays 103 games and doesn't have the year he wants, you go, well, okay. But I mean, George Springer was healthy. I don't know if he's ever going to be healthier than he was last year. That's what concerns me about George Springer is I saw him at his healthiest.
A lot of things got to go right. The American League East for me is better than it was last year.
I can't disagree with you. I'm not convinced that the Red Sox that there isn't a bigger drop off there than people think. But
I think you got to score runs against them to beat them. How's that?
Yeah, because they're going to score runs against you. I would agree with that. That is it for us. Don't forget 6:35 tonight is first pitch. The Jays and the New York Yankees. We will be back on Monday from 11 to noon Eastern on Sportsnet 590, The Fan at Sportsnet. As always, you can catch us via podcast or wherever you get your favorite podcast. Have yourself a great weekend. Enjoy the baseball. And we'll talk on Monday.